You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost. Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental. You know we sit in New York because Weeby tells you every single show. He's not here today. I am David Goss, alongside Charlie Davies up in Boston, Massachusetts, and Matt Doyle, who I will warn you is having one today. So it is going to be a long show. We've got a lot of debate coming up. The greatest team of all time in the bracket. The bracket setup, Doyle's still pissed about. And he's angry with me about 18 other things. So we're going to get to that all coming forward. We are very excited. We've got some great mailbag to talk about as well. We've got some things that we can do for the future that we're going to talk about. And we've got a lot coming up at MLSsoccer.com. You guys, are you excited? Doyle, it's taken us about 2 hours to get here. So are you excited to be with us?
It's Jersey week.
Yeah, Doyle, what are you wearing?
What kit? I got a t-shirt and another shirt.
Let's hear why he doesn't have a jersey on.
Oh, no, they're all in the wash. All my jerseys are in the wash. Yeah.
How about you, David? I assume you hand wash them.
Yeah. Delicates. Absolutely. Tell us about your collection of jerseys. I'm seeing an old Red Bull one, LAFC.
We're doing greatest bracket of all time. So that is the greatest American team of all time, double winning 2016 New York Red Bulls 2 with two national team starters in the starting lineup. We've got LAFC, which I got for free so that I could wear on vacation because I get sweaty. And then everything else I got as a gift, except this one, a David Beckham LA Galaxy jersey that I bought at Dick's Sporting Good with a gift card that I think I got for a birthday. That's the world we live in. Okay. That's what we're coming back to. It is Jersey Week, as Doyle said. You can go to MLSsoccer.com. You can go on Twitter to check out the bracket. It is released today. It is the top 32 jerseys in MLS history facing off. Round of 32 starts. Then you've got the round of 16 coming up on Thursday. And the final will be Sunday, May 24th. So over the next week or so, you can vote on all of that. And Doyle, you already ripped my jerseys. What's your favorite jersey in MLS history?
By a mile, it's the Colorado Rapids state flag jersey. I think it was their secondary jersey in, 16, 17, and 18?
Yeah.
It's the one with the yellow sort of torso and then the bluish purple sleeves. Like, I just think those are awesome. And it obviously has the connection to home because it is the Colorado state flag. Those are, like, the early DC jerseys are great. You know, the Sporting KC jersey that had the Argyle, I thought that was dope. There's been a couple other really good ones. Houston's last year, the black with the orange, I thought that was sharp. But that Colorado State flag jersey, hands down, far and away, number one all time in MLS history.
Reminder, don't start with Doyle because he will say his and then list all the other ones that everyone else wants to say. Charlie, would you like to go second and not say any of the seven?
Yeah, I'm just going to go straight to Tampa Bay Mutiny, 96. The hoop socks, the colorway, I'm all about it. Straight nostalgia for me. So the Tampa Bay Mutiny would definitely get my pick if I had to pick one jersey of all time.
And apparently you're not allowed to say anymore.
And that's
boom. Dunzo.
Dunzo.
Doyle said mine, which was going to be that guy right there. Sporting KC. I love a collar and I love a button. So that jersey, which was, I think, 2014, 2015, along with a little bit of pattern. I think those types are
pristine. You might like it to look at, but playing in a collared with the buttons is
not great.
Not ideal. Yeah.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Charlie just dropped me with the, you don't know what it's like to play. Wait.
Yeah.
So you're telling, obviously the greatest soccer jersey of all time is the Highbury Arsenal maroon with the collar. You think that would have been tough to play it?
You don't like buttons with a collar. Oh,
got it.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. I can accept that. Charlie bringing us his experience as a player. He will do that once again on Wednesday. MLS Classics Remix Goal of the Year. He will watch every single goal of the year, I believe. Is that correct?
Every single goal of the year with three guests.
With Marcelo Balboa.
Brian Ching, Mike McGee, and Jimmy Conrad is alongside me. So we're co-hosting it together. Phenomenal. The one thing that I'm shocked about, out of all the goals of the year, we ranked them, you know, what was our best in those eras? We did like a early, middle, and recent. The defenders, Marcelo Balboa and Jimmy Conrad, were just annihilating the defensive marking on these goals. I could not believe it. I said, I thought you guys were a committee. You guys stuck together. It was all positive. Oh, there's nothing you could have done to stop that. Even the best defender in the world couldn't have stopped. No, it was what a trash defending that is. Like, are you kidding me? I was like, okay, here we go. But I also want to say I'm wearing a jersey, this jersey, TFC, not typical of me to wear a Toronto FC jersey. However, it's a jersey. It's a big week. You're talking about jerseys and why they're important to you. This is Jozy Altidore's Toronto jersey. It was the first time we played against each other since, you know, basically 2009, because we're on the field together. Finally, we're on the field playing against each other. So it was a big moment for me just because of those memories we created in 2009.
So that would be a 2015 Toronto.
Yes.
Toronto jersey. Stand up. Let's see it.
Oh, he had to get the J-Labs off.
Yeah, right. Nice. Solid. Solid.
Charlie looks like he's been working out too. He's filling out that Jozy jersey on the shoulders, which is one of the hardest parts of a Jozy kit because he's got, you know, the pure muscle.
It's like a Dwight Howard kit. But I have twin boys, so I'm constantly lifting them up and
you know,
doing push-ups. So I'm trying to keep up, but as you can see, he's still got, I got plenty of room up top with those traps. Jozy Altidore traps.
You
got
to get on the Mo Adu workout plan, my friend.
Well, if I get on that Mo Adu workout plan, I won't be able to fit through the door. he walks like this. So.
I just want to say that this is from, obviously I had a knee injury, came back, played in an MLS game against Minnesota, scored two goals. It was a huge deal for me, my career, my family, the whole team. So I traded jersey. So that's the one I chose to wear here today from my MLS career. Obviously,
as you're LARPing a soccer player. That's great.
Yeah. So 4 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday is MLS Classics Remix with Charlie and all those goal scorers and defenders.
Wait, I want to ask, Charlie, do you have a favorite goal of the year in MLS history?
Well, now he does. He did a video about it.
Yeah. Or is that a spoiler?
No, might as well let the cat out of the bag. It is Darlington Nagbe's.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just 2011 goals. Insane.
The reason why, for me, I had to choose it, you're not going to see too many people take two touches in the air before a volley. Like, you'll see bicycle kicks. Marcelo Balboa's was the best bicycle kick that I had seen. And it's from a defender, too. Just from the angle, the distance, the amount of power he got, amazing. And we've seen D Rose free kicks and ton of D Rose goals. But with this goal, it pops out. He takes a touch to set himself up, another one, and then the volley. When are you going to see that again? It's one of those.
Never.
It's once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to see another player purposely juggle before volleying, side netting. Just a fantastic goal.
There was a lot of, I remember that year, there was a lot of discussion between that and the Hosley goal. You remember the Eric Hosley goal where he's on the side of the box and he hits it blind, upper 90, and like
it's Casey Keller. Throw in?
I don't remember if it was
offered. No, I think it was a pass. It was a pass because he chipped it. He chipped it to himself and then turned and volleyed it.
And it was insane.
We talked about it. We talked about it on the video. We just said.
And it's a great goal, man.
That's worthy of goal of the year.
Yeah.
But I think it falls in the same year as that Darlington Nagbe goal, so you can't give it to him. But it's definitely a top five goal of all time in MLS.
Yeah, I agree. And the difference to me, though, is like the intentionality with Nagbe and what he was doing. Like as soon as that punch comes out and he's controlling it, you see him take the first touch and you're like immediately something clicks in your brain. It's like, oh, he's doing something here. And credit to John Strong, who I thought nailed the call on that goal as well, which elevated it another level. That's one of my favorites. D-Rose free kick is incredible, especially because we have the angles for it. Like every angle, it goes from top to down, medium, and then lower. It gets, I just hit the mic. It just get like, it gets better and better with that one. And then like Zlatan's, there's, I still net, like, this is like his first touch in MLS to score that goal. I'm looking forward to the show. I'm looking forward to the show, Charlie.
The problem with these goals are you have the great goals, but then you have the big goals and big moments.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, it's hard to decipher because sometimes you see a great goal, but it's maybe the last goal in a 4-0 routing. You're like, ah, yeah, you know, there wasn't that much, you know, the celebration is kind of like, woo, versus game winner, like 90th minute. Everyone's, you know, needs you to come through. You come up with a magical moment and everyone's just like running, chasing you. Everyone's standing up, standing ovation. That's what I want. That's what I feel when you watch this video as well.
Yeah. And Charlie obviously scored some great goals. The one in the Azteca. I mean, I know it's not like pure highlight, but just the run and the way it happens and the smooth finish. That was fantastic. David, you're wearing a soccer jersey. What's your favorite goal? What's the best goal you ever scored?
The best goal I ever scored was ETR pickup in Atlanta, hosted by Continental, where we had cameras out and they were zoomed in on Weeby while I scored.
I remember that goal, actually.
And it's a great goal. It's a backheel finish.
That was
a
really good goal. It's just
video of Weeby going, oh, oh, oh.
Yeah.
But speaking of
intended
soccer,
to burn you. I intended to burn you, but that was actually a really good goal. Okay.
Yeah. Right,
you
as a kid, I scored about 3 own goals and 2 actual goals, so I had a negative goal differential in my life. But speaking of actual soccer, we are going to talk about the greatest teams of all time. But first, the Bundesliga did return this weekend. I believe the Costa Rican League is around the corner. The K-League has started as well. So some countries who are handling this pandemic well, having the opportunity to open up. And there were some Americans and Canadians, former MLS players on the field. And we had some fans that wanted us to talk about that. Thank you to Jake from New Paltz, New York. Shout out to New Paltz. And he says, please tell me you'll be talking Americans and Canadians in the Bundesliga this week on ETR. Our Hudson Valley hero, Tyler Adams, had an impressive day at right back. He seemed a bit hesitant on Saturday. It looked like Nagelsmann told Tyler to stay at home most of the game as Leipzig tried to attack down the left side of the field. I didn't get to watch much of the Schalke game, but it seemed like a rough day for both McKennie and obviously Gio Reyna, who was supposed to start but pulled out in warmups with an injury. Plus more Davies as he looked good in the 30 minutes I watched. Finally, some live soccer to watch. Doyle, of the guys he mentioned there, who stood out to you?
I think Davies probably had the best weekend. He's so dynamic going forward, but he also has the advantage of playing for that Bayern Munich team that just has 70% of the ball and they are able to pull teams around and create a ton of space, and then they get him on the overlap, and he could have had 5 assists in this game because he's just constantly getting to the side of the box and pulling it back and forcing guys to make plays. It was Nevin Subotic who made a bunch of plays, actually. Did you ever play with Nevin in the youth national team camps?
So Nevin came to Boston College for his official visit, and I was the host. So obviously I didn't do a good job because he chose South Florida. And we can talk about that later. But I've known Nevin for a long time. Yeah. And it's kind of crazy to think that he's you know, played at the highest levels, played in Champions League, and has been one of the best defenders in Europe at times. So incredible career.
Yeah, he was good. He was good yesterday. I mean, it was all back foot, clearing stuff out. Bayern Munich are a far better team. Davies had a good game. But you still see those moments. Look, for Bayern Munich, he's an incredible left back. For Canada, he has been bad at left back. He has actively cost Canada massive games against the U.S. Mm-hmm. and against Haiti last year. And you could still see teams kind of trying to exploit that. I think he's going to get better at it. It wouldn't shock me if 2 years from now, he's the best left back in the world. He's certainly kind of on that course, but you still see some of that defensive frailties. With Tyler Adams, there were no defensive frailties, but there was nothing much going forward. I think Jake is right. Like he played a really conservative role. Wasn't really kind of an overlapping fullback. It was a tucking inside, being an extra man in midfield fullback. A lot like how Greg Berhalter used him a year ago or wanted to use him a year ago with the U.S. national team. There was no good or bad to talk about it. I think maybe just one giveaway. But Gio Reyna, it's a bummer he got hurt.
He would have been the youngest starter in Bundesliga history?
I doubt that.
No.
Youngest American starter, maybe.
Well, American starter.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but it was going to be his first start. He got hurt in warmups. You saw him walking around afterwards, smiling. So it's probably just some sort of like tweak, soft tissue injury. Dortmund didn't need him because they just absolutely steamrolled Schalke. And you know, Weston McKennie was in a tough situation. Schalke were playing without their true number six. Weston McKennie had to play as the number six. And he struggled. He did a better job when the game's in front of him. I thought he did a better job of getting into and actually winning challenges. And his passing was okay. He still took too many risks in bad spots, which just drives me nuts. And I actually put more blame on what he had to do the last 2 years, because that wasn't soccer that Schalke played in 17, 18, and 18, 19 under Tedesco. So he tries to make plays that you can't make at that level unless you're a god tier soccer player. He's not. The big thing with him is just his recognition is still too slow. He switches off. And we saw it like the first, the third and the fourth goals. He was a step and a half away from making the defensive play. And you could be glass half full and be like, okay, well, he was a step and a half away from making the defensive play. Maybe given more time, he'll make that play. But that's also what he's been when he's playing his actual position as a number eight for the U.S. national team. If you look at what happened last summer in the Gold Cup, he was a step and a half away from making the defensive play. And
you're talking about the Mexico final, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it comes down to positioning, tactical positioning. So
yeah,
you may think that you have a certain level of athleticism that will allow you to gamble, to cheat, and you think you can still recover because you have that speed or the quickness. You get to a certain level, it's not quick enough or not fast enough. You can't outrun the ball. A better place. Yes, you need to be more well positioned to make those defensive tackles. And I think over time he's going to learn. He's got to learn sooner than later if he wants to have immediate success with the U.S. men's national team and with Schalke.
Yeah, I agree with that, Charlie. But the thing that even concerns me more than that is if you look at the second goal, he just has an off switch. Now, he wasn't at all culpable on that goal, because what happens is Daoud comes straight up the middle towards zone 14 where Weston McKennie is, and he slides it left to Julian Brandt, who goes to the same barber as Andrew Weedy. and then Brandt slips.
Pre-corona, though.
Pre-corona, yeah. And then Brandt slips Guerrero through on the left wing. And Guerrero just goes, angles in straight on goal, shoots, and scores. Okay, anytime you score a goal, good job. But that was actually the wrong decision. Guerrero should have pulled it back, because once he was at the side of the box, he should have pulled it back to the penalty spot, because Daoud was there all by himself. Because after Daoud slipped that pass to Brandt, he just keeps his run going straight to the penalty spot, which is just fundamentals. He runs right by Weston McKennie, who turns and watches him go and doesn't track the run. To me, that was the most disturbing thing about this performance from McKennie, because if you're like, he's obviously a Bundesliga caliber player, but if you're going to be a central hub, a central midfielder on a really good team, you can't have that off switch in that moment, because that's a goal. Against Mexico in a World Cup qualifier down in Costa Rica, that's a goal. You're giving up a goal because you didn't track a simple straightforward run. So I was pretty bummed about Weston McKennie's performance, but a couple mitigating factors. One, it's his first game in 2 months. Two, everybody on Schalke stunk.
Yeah,
I had a lot of people saying, he had a lot of people saying like he was the best player on Schalke. Like, okay, it's pretty low bar.
4-0 loss.
Yeah, and three is he was playing a new position. So, and that's all taken in the context of his last game before the break against Hoffenheim. He was amazing. It was the best game I've ever seen him play. So, going to give him a mulligan in this one and hope that he comes back stronger next week. And Schalke need that, by the way, because they're in tailspin.
The other conversation this weekend that was big, I'd say, for all of us on social media and American and Canadian fans wasn't how the performances went, but the fact that there's this many young players in Germany, a big league, starting four teams, competing four teams. Mm-hmm. Some people argue that it's always been this way, that you've always had good young players and players, you know, Jonathan Spector played in Man U's academy. You always had guys going over and getting opportunities. Some would argue nothing's changed. Some would argue something has changed. Charlie, you've been to Europe as an American. You've had the experience. What do you make of a Weston McKennie getting the start week in and week out? Whether he always performs at the best level, has something changed for Americans and Canadians, or has something changed with the way they've handled the situation?
Every situation is different. Every player has a different coach, which has a different mentality. But when you're in those big countries, Germany, France, Spain, England, not so much England, but you have to submerge yourself in the culture. You have to show a willingness and a desire to learn the language, to learn, you know, the food you eat, to have those discussions, to show that you care, that you're trying the most. And is it for every single foreigner that's not in Europe? No. If you're Brazilian, people go, he's Portuguese. He's not probably not going to learn the language, and we don't care because he's Brazilian. He's going to score a lot of goals, or he's going to, you know, beat all these people on the dribble. You put up with it. That's like that's okay. That's norm. But if you're an American, the stereotype is you're a hard worker. You don't have the tactical knowledge or the technique because you're from America. You're not in Europe, and you still have to learn. You have to do all those little things right. Because in order for you to play over a young, talented academy product that they're potentially going to sell in the future and make a lot of money from because they've developed them, you have to do so many things right. And you have to do so many things that much better to play over a younger kid. There has to be a huge difference for them to say, you know what, we're going to stick with this American kid or play this young 17, 18-year-old academy product. So you have to be that much better, and you have to continue to push. And that's the only way, because you can never settle. That's the worst thing you can do in Europe is you win your starting job. You have 5-6 good games, maybe even 5-6 great games. Everyone's saying, wow, what a player. And you take your foot off the gas. As soon as you do that and you have one bad game, maybe two, guess what? You're starting to get substituted. Then it's the next guy's turn. And if the next guy takes off and he's from France, Denmark, or Germany or Spain, see you later. Because now they're going to give him all the opportunities to make it. You've had your shot and you're not going to get it back until there's a red card or an injury. That's just the way it is in Europe. As an American, it's so much more difficult. You have to do so much more. You have to train so much better than the next guy to get your chance. So a guy like Weston McKennie, he's training well. He has to be training extremely well, because even when he has those bad performances, he's still in the lineup, which means he's learned the language. He can communicate with his teammates. He's well-liked. The coach likes him, and he does his job every single day.
And he came into it. He lived in Germany as a kid. So I think one of the draws for him, and what I've heard from FC Dallas people, we were never really going to keep him, was he was already fluent in German. And if a German club wanted to give him an opportunity, it made sense for him because he had lived there, because he fits in so quickly. And like you said, Charlie, that gives him that half leg up, especially coming out of the academy of, they kind of feel like he's one of theirs. He's maybe got a little opportunity that the average American who comes over at 22, 23 doesn't have, in the perception that Schalke gives him. And I would say when you watch him play, there's all these mistakes. But there's moments where someone plays him a bad pass and he has to react instinctively. And he puts a great layoff as a through ball. And you're like, he does these things that are impressive. It's the teachable stuff and the locked in mentality stuff that you still need to work on, but you can see why they put him out there. Pulisic obviously went over at a young age, learned the mm-hmm. language as well, got ingrained in the club, all those things. It's interesting to see. There's a lot of promise. There's a lot of hope. I mean, there could have been, if Reyna hadn't gotten hurt, what, 5 U22 and under American players in the Bundesliga, depending on what Josh Sargent does later today, which we won't know, which we would all have killed for such a long time ago. And Now we just need them to develop and get there.
And Goss, one thing that I think fans forget is the pressure to win and succeed and perform in Europe is extremely high, because it can be the difference between making millions of dollars for qualifying in Europe and playing in an elite competition like Champions League, or losing millions and millions of dollars by being relegated. So you have to perform every week, because either way, your club is chasing, whether it's to make Europe or stay in the league, they need you to perform. And if you're not doing it for 1 week or 2 weeks, it's the next guy's turn and you might not get that shot again.
Dole, you ready to perform for me? You ready to step up big right now?
Are we going to talk about John Brooks and Alfredo Morales?
Do you want to?
No. Okay. They both played. John Brooks had an own goal. Alfredo Morales got 20 minutes. I mean, it was good to see that amount of Americans playing at the top flight. I think a couple of guys played in the two Bundesliga as well.
Julian Green, baby.
Julian
Never
Green.
Never forget. World Cup goal Tillman. Scorer. Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. Some big soccer love deep in the Charlie Fiction 11 there. But I was going to say, Doyle, we're talking greatest team of all time. The bracket is set. We are on to the next round. We are voting on half our bracket. We have the fan votes to put in here. Don't forget, going forward, we'll continue to have votes coming forward. But David Skokie says, I'm enjoying the bracket countdown, but I'd love to hear more of a tactical breakdown of some of these matches. How do you think these teams would play against each other? What strengths and weaknesses would each present? You've done that a bit, but I'd love to hear a little bit more. He also says he doesn't have Twitter, so Eleanor Holmes Norton style, he's going to be a non-voting delegate here. So he emailed us. Says you can, if you don't have Twitter, feel free to email us your votes as well, and we'll definitely read them on the show and take them into consideration. No Andrew Wiebe here today. As Doyle mentioned, the Bundesliga's back. We've never seen Sven Lars Bender and Andrew Wiebe in the same room together, so we don't know if he's one of those brothers. But whatever it is, he will be back on Thursday. But without him, we only have three people here. Plus the fan vote is one extra vote, so that's four votes. So we could end up in a deadlock. So Anders will be our deciding vote, which already means 2014 Seattle has one vote in the bank. So we have to be very sure about how we feel when we get to those matchups. Let's start with the first matchup. It is 2017 Toronto FC against 2001 Miami Fusion. It was a 1-5 seed. TFC came in, I think, as our number one overall seed. It was always going to be an uphill battle. The fan vote is 91%. In favor of Toronto FC, of course, a nice 69 points, which was the record at the time. They won a Canadian Championship, Supporters Shield, MLS Cup, and then the next year they went to a CCL final, which they lost on penalty kicks while I got covered in beer in Guadalajara. One of the great moments of my life, though I won't complain. Is there anything you guys feel the need to bring up here in this matchup?
I mean, the better team won. 91-9 is harsh on that. On that Miami Fusion team, which is like littered with essentially Hall of Famers. Nick Raimondo in goal, Carlos Llamosa, Pablo Mastroeni, Chris Henderson, Preki, of course. That was a great team. That was a great, great team. But Toronto FC is the only team that won everything they went up for in the league, outside the league that year. And then they got closer than anybody else to winning MLS Cup. Or to winning CCL, rather. It's the right team won.
Yep.
Charlie's got the kit on. Charlie feels the same. Of course, Victor Vasquez joining in 2017, which took them over the edge from not being able to score in the 2016 MLS Cup to, of course, winning it in 2017. Jonathan Osorio stepping into his role that year and getting that little bit better. Marky Delgado on top of Josie Jovinko and Michael Bradley. So they are still our number one seed. They move on. Our next spot in the bracket was 2010 RSL versus the 2015 New York Red Bulls, who were the two seed in this bracket. We can get into that if we need to. RSL, 56 points, was second in the West. 20 goals allowed, we mentioned last show, is the MLS record. And this is the team that, starting in 2010, CCL started in about August, going through to April of 2011 was the CCL final, the first MLS team in it, in that format, losing, of course, to Monterrey in the two legs versus the 2015 New York Red Bulls, who had 60 points and they won the Shield, beating FC Dallas on goal differential. The fan vote was tight on this one. 49.7% to RSL, 50.3% to 2015 New York Red Bulls. Charlie, let's start with you. Where do you fall on this? What's your thought process?
This one is very close. If I'm going to pick a team, I'm going 2010 RSL. And the Sabarillo Espíndola partnership with Javi Morales and Beckerman in the midfield. Olave was an absolute beast. I just feel that this team would be well suited to play against this 2015 Red Bull New York team. I mean, Red Bull is going to press, not really possession based. Dax and Sasha look to just play those through balls, of penetrating balls, and just win those turnovers in the back. But this RSL team can sit, they can possess. Beckerman and Javi Morales on the ball. Espíndola and Sabarillo, I think it's just too difficult. It's just a complete team from front to back. And I would give them the nod. Even though it's very close, that 2010 RSL team is not losing to this New York team.
Doyle?
Yeah, I think I give a slight edge to that RSL team. If you look at their late season run, like they didn't lose a game the second half of the season. Now, they didn't win back-to-back games either, because as you said, they were juggling CCL group stage play at that time. I think if there is no group stage, then like they probably would have won the Shield that year.
They lost the Shield to the Galaxy, who lost in the play-in game to Puerto Rico, so had no CCL to deal with.
Right.
Purposely, right. It seems like.
Purposely, yes. there was a way to beat that RSL team. And it's you just destroy, you break the diamond with speed. Like that has always been the way to break apart any diamond, whether it's some of the classic ones that they played in Argentina, even DC United in 1998. That's how Chicago mm-hmm. beat them on the counter. And this RSL team in 2010 in the playoffs against FC Dallas, Dallas just ran past. They just blew them away by getting out into open field. This 2015 Red Bulls team was great, but they didn't have that. They didn't play that type of soccer. Mm-hmm. So I do think I give the slightest of edges to 2010 RSL, but it's a coin flip. It's really close.
Was it Sabarillo and Espíndola, or Sabarillo and Finley, Robbie Finley, or was it?
It was Espíndola.
It was mostly Espíndola, because Finley was gone for about half the season at the World Cup, and then he didn't come. Did he come straight back to RSL, or did he go?
I think he went to Europe.
Yeah.
Because Jura and Finley both had gone, and Espíndola starts in the CCL final for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Finley was there in 2010 with RSL and went to Nottingham Forest in 2011.
Okay.
But I think Espíndola had the starting spot over him. Either way, I think it goes to the point of those are players that can stretch the field mm-hmm. and give space underneath for Javi Mo and Sabo to play. And a lot of teams couldn't handle creativity against the Red Bulls with numbers dropped deep because you didn't have anyone to play off of. But you give Javi Mo and Sabo that space to work together when the Red Bulls get pushed forward and you just play long, which is kind of what Columbus did to them. And they have that playmaker to create underneath, and they have guys who can finish. The whole question mark, obviously, for the CCL final was Espíndola and his finishing when he got opportunities. But that's your biggest Achilles heel, where you look at on the flip side, there are some more Achilles heels at times for New York in this. So
I think Parnell is not handling any of those strikers. I'll tell you that right now.
Tommy and Parnell slander on this show.
Catching a stray.
He was very good that year. So that's three votes here.
Damian Parnell started, but you guys still had 2015 Red Bulls over 2018 Red Bulls. That's good.
Solid, Doyle, who would you have picked in 2018 versus 2010?
I think it would have been 2018 Red Bulls. I think their press and their ability to just ruin any type of build, like they destroyed Atlanta United's buildup. They broke that 2018 Atlanta United team to the point where Tata Martino was like, screw this, for playing on the counterattack. I think they would have done that and more to that RSL team, that as beautiful as they were, and I love the diamond, as beautiful as they had no plan B. If you broke the diamond, like they couldn't play you on the counter. So I think the 2018 Red Bulls, if they had been properly seeded, would have gotten past this 2010 RSL team, but the 2015 Red Bulls, who are a worse team that you guys seeded incorrectly, they lose to this RSL.
Although you look at, and maybe not the right comparison, when they went down to Saprissa, they sat back, they played deep, they scored off a set piece. They played a different style at times when they went on the road to the way they played in MLS week in and week out, and showed they could do it to somewhat a high level.
They could counter with Robbie Finley.
Ooh, Charlie with a lot of Robbie Finley.
Robbie Finley is the guy counter. Who's going to put you. He's going to put you over the top in the bracket. No, the best.
I never say he's going to put you over the top. I said you could counter. Uh-huh. I said you could counter with him.
Yeah. All right. Where's the final shot go?
So
it's a cutback.
So I'll say this, Anders also voted 2010 RSL. So that's 4-1 against New York Red Bull. So 2010 RSL makes their way through on this one. And that takes us to the 2014 LA Galaxy versus 2000 Houston Dynamo. Of course, we picked this LA Galaxy team as our number one Galaxy team when we did the greatest team mm-hmm. and the Mount Rushmore and all of that. 61 points, which was second in the West to a Seattle team that we're about to get to. They won MLS Cup, of course, Landon Donovan and Robbie Keane, no Beckham anymore at that point, versus 2007 Houston, who had 52 points, which was second in the West, a plus 20 goal differential. And I think technically were the second best defensive team of all times in terms of goals conceded. But of course, they played less games back then, just 30 games. They beat the Revs in MLS Cup final. Mm-hmm. 73% of the vote went to the LA Galaxy in this one over the Houston Dynamo. I don't know if the Galaxy fans have come out and voted hard. I don't know if it's that, or if I don't know if this is that mismatch.
It's not. It's a mismatch.
Cool.
Robbie Keane.
My Duane De Rosario.
Robbie Keane was on another level in 2014. Give it to him. I saw it firsthand. It's not even close. Not even close.
Doyle, give me some Houston love here.
That team was great. They played more attractive soccer than they're given credit for. Everybody remembers the grit and grind Dom Kinnear teams, and to be clear, this team could still grit and grind, but with Dero at the 10, and it was Ching and Gwenya up top, and Gwenya's not a great. He's Robbie Finley level forward in this league's history. I would
don't
say.
Do that. Don't do that to Robbie Finley. I play with both. Don't do that to Robbie.
Joseph and Gwenya was on the books at Bayern Munich for a week. Don't disrespect.
Stop it.
Where'd you play with Joseph? In DC.
DC.
Yeah.
Brad Davis, Stu Holden.
Holden.
Yes.
Yeah, Sue Holden was on the bench. Team.
Yeah.
Wando was on the bench.
Yep.
Corey Ash, Brian Mullen, Richard Mulrooney, Rico Clark.
Why are we naming the bench guys?
To show how deep the team is.
I just named four starters. This team was really, really good. This was essentially the group that won four MLS Cups between, three MLS Cups and a shield between 2003 and 2007. They were borderline dynasty.
Yep.
The Galaxy, 2014 Galaxy, actually were a dynasty. They were. And they had, in Robbie Keane, they had the best player in the league. In Landon Donovan, they had arguably the best player in MLS history, having maybe his best year. He had like 12 goals and 19 assists that season. And once Landon got cut from the national team, like there was no question who was going to win MLS Cup that year. Like the way they played as a group. And I will say this about this Galaxy team. They were better than the Beckham Galaxy teams because Sarvas was just doing all that dirty work. He was just killing people in central midfield. So you couldn't, like those Beckham Galaxy teams, you could sometimes play through central midfield because he and Juninho were good, but they weren't that type of defensive player. But you had Sarvas in there leaving cleat marks on everybody's ankles.
And Omar was arguably at his best as well.
Yeah. So I no disrespect to that 2007 Dynamo team. They had a lot of talent. 2014 Galaxy wins.
The one thing I have to correct on that is Houston was not arguably a dynasty. Back-to-back MLS Cups and a Shield the year after, that's a dynasty.
Shield the year before. Yeah, we would think about them as a dynasty if that Shield hadn't happened in San Jose.
Yeah.
You know, this was the San Jose Earthquakes team that won Cup in 01 and 03, Shield in 05, and then moved to Houston and won Cup in 06 and 07. We would think of that as a dynasty.
Charlie, I know that where you fall, and I don't think it has anything to do with who you played against, the era you played in, and then the respect it takes to your team. I'm a huge fan of this Houston team. I think, Charlie, the reason we were mentioning the bench was we've talked. I mean, all of these teams are great. All of these teams have very few holes in their starting lineup. Mm-hmm. This was a Houston group then. Obviously, Wando wasn't Wando. That brought Stuart Holden off the bench, who's in their Mount Rushmore as one of their best players for what he went on to be. Or maybe was in their Mount Rushmore. I don't actually remember
Stu
that.
Holden was not.
Definitely not in Houston's Mount Rushmore.
No.
Whoa, don't give me a... Don't say Houston like that, like he played for a different team that he would have been in the Mount Rushmore for.
But like Charlie, you just said, he was coming off the bench.
Just making stuff up.
I'm Come saying on. That this is a deep team with a ton of talent that has a backline that would not lose to this team. A central midfield that would battle as well. And then you have legitimate game winners in D-Row, Brad Davis. And they didn't even have Brian Ching in MLS Cup Final because he was injured. So they started Jaquia and Joseph Ngwenya, who's one of the greatest strikers in MLS history. And they still won MLS Cup. That's depth, baby.
Yeah, no Rico Clark in that final either. Did you just say that? Yeah, no Rico Clark because that was after he had kicked Pescadito. Yeah. So he was suspended. They still had Maroney. No, it was a great, deep team, but it was not the 2014 Galaxy.
I got to look at Anders' vote, but I already know it's going to be the 2014 Galaxy, which is going to take it over the top. All the fans voted for it well. I'm putting down a vote for posterity's purposes for the Houston Dynamo 2007. You're welcome. Let's go, Houston. H-Town, baby. But once again, the LA Galaxy go through, and I'll just...
Would you say that's Houston's best team, the 2007?
I think so, because of Stu. Because Stu had become legit that year, and you didn't know before that if they were going to have an extra guy who could make those plays. I actually thought he didn't play enough in 2007, but...
Yeah, he'll tell you the same thing.
Yeah. So
curveball, really shocking.
Yeah, but like that team was really, really, really good. And the fact that they beat a really, really, really good Revs team in the final without Brian Ching and without Rico Clark and coming back from a goal down, that like saying mentality is a cliche, but this team had it up there.
Yeah, they did,
which is why they won so much.
Let's move on to our final matchup of this bracket and one that is going to probably torture us, definitely haunt me. It is the 2014 Seattle Sounders versus the 2018 New York Red Bulls because, as Doyle said, we incorrectly seeded and picked on the New York Red Bulls matchup. That New York Red Bulls team had the record for points at the time with 71, beating out Atlanta United, of course, for the Shield plus 29 goal differential. And for the Sounders, 64 points got them the Supporters Shield. They also won the Open Cup. At the time, it was the record for wins in a season with which 2017 Seattle then beat out. And of course, you had Oba Deuce and Chad Marshall. Who wants to get us started here? Oh, I can give you the fan vote. I didn't do that for you guys. The fan vote was 60% for Seattle. If I put a Seattle jersey on and ran for president, I'd probably win the state of Washington. They're pretty good pretty good getting out and polling. Does anyone who wants to start here?
I'm going to go 2014 Seattle. I know Doyle is all about that 2018 Red Bull team, but with Oba Deuce, Chad Marshall, Ozzie Alonso, Stefan Fry, they were just it was a machine. And I always think back to that MLS Cup final and thinking, wow, this Galaxy team was able to knock off Seattle. And I remember watching the semifinals and be like, there's no way Seattle doesn't win this. Like they're just, it's almost meant to be. But they're always gonna have like a just an asterisk next to their name because they couldn't win the MLS Cup. And that was such a talented team. It was one of those teams that had everything to win, but came up short. So it's always going to be held against them. And this New York team lost to Atlanta, who ended up winning. So both teams lost to MLS Cup.
To number one seeds in this bracket. Mm-hmm. Both are number one seeds. You'd argue for Doyle as a Supporters Shield truther, this is the ultimate matchup in his books. Which way are you leaning?
It's tough because the definitive thing about those Red Bulls teams was they were one piece short in attack. Like it eventually, every series, it all came down to Bradley Wright Phillips. And that was tough on him because while he's one of the all-time greats, he's not Joseph. He's not Robbie Keane. And he wasn't able to get them over the hump. And like, that's what this kind of looks at. But then you remember what Obafemi Martins was in the playoffs. And what Obafemi Martins was in the playoffs was nothing. He literally did not score a playoff goal in his Sounders career. In the biggest games for this team, he didn't show up. Whereas if you look at the Red Bulls, like, yeah, they fell short, but they fell short to that Atlanta team, which we all agree is one of the greatest teams of all time. And they made a really, really great run in the CONCACAF Champions League, getting to the semifinals against Chivas and then outplaying Chivas.
But they also had a fully fit Clint Dempsey.
They did. No, for sure. They did. And it was, and they were a great team. But I just think if you look at it, you know, going into the playoffs, both these teams had the same questions. Neither of these teams ultimately had an answer that they wanted to have. So then you start looking at the other factors. And the biggest factor to me is defense. Like that Sounders team, they had Chad Marshall. They had a really good defense. They gave up 50 goals. That Red Bulls team gave up 33.
Yeah. On the Oba slander, I would say, though, he did score in Open Cup final. He came off the bench against Philly to score in a final, which was a huge moment on the road for them. Obviously not at the level that a 2014 Galaxy team is, where doing it in that moment, he did at some point do something big in a big game.
Zero goals, zero assists in 700 playoff minutes for Oba.
Yeah, it's not good.
I mean, that's a sample size.
No. Charlie felt the trapdoor go out under.
No, but what when you look at the New York team outside of Bradley Wright Phillips, who's scoring?
Well, I mean, Royer was huge in the playoffs that year, and he was huge in Champions League play as well. But Royer is like the same type of, like, he was a great signing, but you're not going to be like, oh man, we're definitely winning this series because we have Daniel Royer. You know, he's like a good third option. You had Kaku had a really good year, but I don't think he's quite at that level. I think in terms of talent, you look at that Sounders attack and you take it 10 times out of 10, but that talent, that attack wasn't enough to get them where they wanted to be in 2014.
Throw in Ozzie Alonso, you throw in Chad Marshall on set pieces. I mean, who's gonna defend Chad Marshall on set piece on that team?
Tim Parker. Long? Like the Red Bulls in 2018 on set pieces were amazing. They scored like 12 set piece goals that year. I think it does come down to defense. Yeah, the numbers tell the story, man. Like the Red Bulls gave up 33 goals over the course of the season. Seattle gave up 50.
It's tough to go against that. I would say when you talk about matchup, what's interesting about these teams is they both had the way they played. They both seemed to lose in the playoffs when it didn't work. So the question of like ability to adjust, I think you would say coming into this, the Red Bulls would make Seattle adjust, where Seattle would hope to make the Red Bulls adjust, but you're not sure if they'd be able to. The way that they would set themselves up, the way they had played all year, it may have been harder for them. For New York, if the press got broken, how would they react? Obviously, they made the decision they did in Atlanta. They struggled in Atlanta, and that put them behind the eight ball to go to MLS Cup, which it seemed like they were kind of on the road to. As Doyle said, they basically broke Atlanta 2 months earlier and then got knocked out by them. So that's one of the things that kind of goes against New York, where I just think you're talking pure talent on Seattle, and at some point, and I know Charlie, which way he'll fall of like, if it becomes a battle and a fight and neither team's doing the things they want, who are you going to take in that big moment? It's going to be Ozzie Alonso. It's going to be Clint Dempsey. It's going to be a guy like Chad Marshall of just, yeah, they're going to figure it out and create a moment, you know, in a tough game.
Yes.
This is the toughest one. This one's really hard. We saw the fan one. We've got Seattle vote on the fan one. Obviously we know what Anders votes. So if one of us votes for Seattle, it's going to go Seattle's side. Who wants to start with the voting, Doyle?
I'll take the 2018 Red Bulls by a hair. Again, it's basically a coin flip.
Charlie? I'm going 2014 Seattle.
Boom. And I don't even have to vote.
It's not like, and like he said, it's by a hair. Like, this New York team was legit.
Oh, but I'm going to tell a Ziggy story. 2016, we were covering MLS Cup, and this was right after Ziggy had been let go by the Sounders, and we were sitting there talking. Just, David, you worked with Ziggy a ton. You mm-hmm. played for him a little bit, Charlie. And, like, everybody knows, Ziggy was the easiest guy to talk to. Mm-hmm. Just loved talking soccer, and we were talking about, he watched everything. We were watching what happened in the league, and he was talking about the Red Bulls. And I was like, I mean, what they're doing is different. You know, it's a press. It's like how Peter plays, but it's different because this trigger and that trigger, and, you know, the formation is a little different. And he goes, I would want to play a team. I would want to play against a team like that every single week. Let me play against that team every single week. So 2014 Seattle has a very confident Ziggy Schmid as their head coach going into this matchup against 2018 Red Bulls.
God, I would love to see Aaron Long chase Obafemi over the top on any ball that's played out of the back off the press. The other thing that'd be fascinating, you mentioned Royer, what Yedlin could do against him. We know what he did against Hazard that year in the World Cup as, like, maybe you're not giving the attack, but if his role was shut this guy down because we think Chad can handle BWP if he's isolated, mm-hmm. it's a pretty tough matchup for New York. So this one has gone Seattle's way. I didn't even have to vote, so I don't have to anger anyone. Shout out Red Bulls too. Go Red Bulls too. We are sorry to the New York Red Bulls for screwing up our bracket immediately. The second half of the bracket is coming out for voting. Coming up, Anders, you can tell me when that is because I don't even know, but it will be on Twitter. And if you don't have Twitter, you can just email us or text us. It's coming out on Wednesday, obviously, and we will read those emails. Are you guys ready to hear people complain about us?
Yeah.
Yeah, always. Why not? Yeah, kind of always. Sure, yeah.
Charlie's there for it. Doyle seemed a little hesitant. Doyle, are you okay? Normally you feed off this.
No, it's fine.
You're a little full. You're not as hungry today. Right. Benjamin Whalen here, and he said, been loving the show, love the quarantine podcast, been a huge fan of MLS and KC since 2004 when I was 8 years old. Let's get into some info. My research is correct. There have been 13 doubles in MLS's 24-year history. All of them made it into your bracket except four teams. In 2005, Galaxy, who finished ninth of 12 teams and only made it in the playoffs because of the two expansion teams and their conference. Next, the 96 and 99 DC United teams. There are so many good 90s DC teams you guys included too, so fair enough. That brings me to the glaring, most obvious omission of the entire bracket, and I'm so glad someone wrote this for us so that I can then get into it. The 2000 Kansas City Wizards. Not only did that Wizards team edge out your number 3 seed 2000 Chicago Fire in Supporters Shield with goal differential as a second tiebreaker, they also then went on and beat them in MLS Cup. That Wizards team to this day had the best defense arguably in league history, with Tony Meola being the only goalkeeper to ever win MLS MVP and Defender of the Year, Peter Vermes leading the way. And yes, Chicago had a great offense, but defense wins championships. And that leads me to my next point. The 05 Revs over 2013 SKC. Okay, maybe, but to use the argument that the Revs offense was better than SKC's and not even mention that SKC had the best defense in the league that season is inexcusable. 30 goals allowed. All three Americans on that defense went to the following USMNT January camp, not to mention Eiko Parra, who was on the bench. That's a lot of KC love from a KC fan, so I'm going to stop there.
Yeah, that's a lot of KC love.
But I will say, I think the most glaring issue in our brackets was the addition of Kalen Karsius and Dynamo and Charlie Davies' New England Revolution, subtracting that 2000 KC Wizards team. That was our biggest mistake, and that is the worst thing that happened.
That's not how it happened.
How's that not how it happened?
We didn't add them in place of anyone. We just decided there needed to be play-in rounds so that Charlie and Kalen would have a little bit of skin in the game. Make the argument for the 2014 Revs and 2012.
Understood. Yeah. But we should have relegated our higher level at-large bids to that play-in game and allowed the KC Wizards 2000 in as an at-large rather than Kalen Carr's 2012 Houston Dynamo team that grinded out a victory and got into an MLS Cup where they had like two shots.
Yeah, Kalen scored one of them, man.
No, that was 2012, not 2011. Sorry. Yeah. 2012 was better, but not by much. Charlie,
Either way, all of us didn't have a shot at going far in this bracket, so it's irrelevant.
No, it's not irrelevant, Charlie. It matters. Things matter. That's why you do them. I will say this. I would probably pick your 2014 Revs over the Dynamo if I had to eliminate one. So you've got that going for you.
Yeah, 100%.
100% seems
it's
like
it. It's 100%. But continue.
Seems like a little bit of an exaggeration. Last one here, Luke from Waterloo.
I just want to say that that was Benjamin who sent that in. Yeah. He's right. We biffed it by not including the 2000 KC team in there. I don't know if I would say that they should have been in there over Chicago, but they should have been one of the at-large bids. Mm-hmm. As always, when stuff like this happens, it's Anders' fault. 100% Anders' fault.
So. Anders just throwing hates the Midwest.
Throwing the producer under the bus.
Yeah.
Yep.
He just, it's flyover country to him, and that's how he handles it.
He tried to add six more Sounders teams in there.
Didn't let him do that. It is pretty amazing that the Sounders went to three of four MLS Cups, and we didn't put any of those teams in our bracket, but I'll take it. I'm
honestly
fine with
the
that.
Best. I think the best Sounders team is the second half of 2018 Sounders team. Like, that's the one that had the 11 game winning streak.
Once they got Raul Ruiz Diaz.
Yep. Once they got him,
they just went on a run.
They were awesome in that second half. And the only reason they lost in the playoffs is because Marshall and Alonso got hurt. So anyway, continue.
Yeah. Even over, I guess you have Marshall. Because 2019, you have Jordan Morris. 2018, you did not have him.
But for sure.
Chad Marshall, I think, wins over that. Okay. Final one to close out here. Luke from Waterloo has been loving the show. I think there are a lot of people wondering the same thing. They'd be interested to hear, what do you guys use for all this research? What websites have you used for stats, for historical things, stuff like that? He also enjoyed Chris Henderson on the show. We always enjoy having Chris Henderson. He's awesome. What do you guys use for anyone out there who wants to
Their own? I use everything. I use MLS, Wikipedia. I use personal experience and knowledge.
My job.
So that's what I use.
I use SoccerWay. I swear by SoccerWay. I do a lot of like CONCACAF Cup games, St. Vincent and the Grenadines versus, you know, whatever, Antigua, and I swear by SoccerWay as my official way to find everything. But for these, MLSsoccer.com has been huge, and Wikipedia is always a nice glance.
Yeah. Doyle? Wikipedia is great. SoccerWay, Transfer Market is super useful with stuff like that. We also have tools here, you know, courtesy of Opta. So for some of the more advanced stats, I always have that stuff open. But if you go to the front page of MLSsoccer.com and you scroll all the way down to the bottom on the right in the black with white writing under media resources, you see fact and record book. You click on that and you get yourself like a 250 page PDF of every fact and record, every box score statistic in MLS history. Every journalist in the country that covers Major League Soccer is intimately familiar with the FARB. And if you want to do it like the pros do it, you keep the FARB open and then you watch hours and hours of cat videos on YouTube.
Doyle actually printed his out. So he has that as a book on his nightstand and he just flips through a few pages every night. I will put someone on blast here. I did a lot of research trying to find some box scores of the 2006 PDL semifinals and finals featuring the Westchester Flames losing to the Laredo Heat for last trivia.
Legendary game. Yeah.
And PDL, now known as USL League 2, no research available. Every link went dead, and I could not find enough to get a question together for my man Chuck. So shout out to MLSsoccer.com and someone step up for me and help me. Because the question I had would have been impossible. Charlie, do you want the question?
Yeah, I'll take the question. Since we
the 2006 Westchester Flames, with the Charlie Davies up top, lost in the semifinals to the Laredo Heat, who went on to lose in the final, who won the final, and who scored the game-winning goal. This is what Charlie looked like on Instagram last week, because 7 p.m. Eastern time every Wednesday you can watch ETR.
The thing is, trivia. I'm always on fire for the questions when it comes to MLS trivia. I am.
It's not as easy when the commenters aren't there to help you out, is it, Charlie?
Well, the thing is, when we lost, it was like, I'm done. I don't care about PDL. I don't care who wins the final. We lost. I'm heated. It's done.
Why'd you play for Westchester?
I got coerced into playing for Westchester.
Coerced?
Yeah. Because they had a lot of the Region 1 ODP guys that I played with. And so they said, you know, it's a great team. We're going to win. Ricky Schramm, who was at Georgetown, he won, I think he won Big East Offensive Player of the Year.
He was good.
Luke Sager was one of my friends. He played at Stanford, then transferred to Harvard. So he would drive me. So I stayed with him in Connecticut, and then we'd drive down to New York. Charles Olchek was on the team. He was at Harvard. Now works with Don Garber. So a lot of talented players, and we crushed it. We did really well. Probably should have been in that final. But great memories. I mean, you're talking about
who won the Golden Boot in PDL that year?
Was it me?
No, I couldn't find it. That was going to be one of the questions I wanted to create, but I couldn't find it. I'll tell you this, the answer to that trivia question, it would have been better if he'd played at DC one more year, was Ty Schipelein. He scored the game winner for the Michigan Bucks, who are the all-time winningest PDL team in history. But he left DC the year before you, so you didn't know him. So I couldn't put that question together that way. So instead, I threw American Gambians at you, and you were not going to get that one either.
No, nobody was going to get that one.
Golden Boot. Co-winners were John Cunliffe from Boulder Rapids Reserve and Augusta Fireballs, Frederico Mugin.
Big year.
I remember. I remember him.
He played at Clemson in 06.
Yeah, I remember him.
So on this high, if you want more of this, because you do, go on Instagram, MLS's account on Wednesday night.
He's with Dane Richards up top, that Federico.
Ooh, Dane Richards.
Dane Richards.
That's an MLS legend. All right, we might have to get a Dane Richards question going for next time.
Get an ACC question going. Come on, man.
Charlie, I already gave you like a BC Seton Hall one.
One more little bit of trivia. What MLSer was in goal for that mid-Michigan Bucks team or Michigan Bucks team that won in 2006?
Steve Clark?
There you go. Look at that.
Oh!
Look at that.
I didn't actually know that. I just guessed someone from Michigan who's about the right age.
We got to leave on a high.
This is high. On a high. Come on, baby. 9 out of 10 2 weeks ago. Charlie and Andrew, 8 out of 10 last week. That's numbers. That's stats. Mic drop. Catch us on MLS Instagram on Wednesday night. We'll be back here. Don't forget to vote on the bracket. And on that one, see you next time.
All right, Simon.
That's on a high, baby.
All right,
Steve
Simon.
Clark trivia.
See you next time.